Welcome to Becoming Parents Podcast. I'm your host, Jennifer Campbell. I'm a doula in Washoe County, Nevada, a Medicaid provider, a lactation educator, childbirth educator, and mom of 18. You can find me and connect on doulainreno.com. Remember, give a shout out to those who are brave enough to share their stories with us on how they have become parents. Let's dive in. Welcome to Becoming Parents Podcast. I'm the host, Jennifer Campbell, and I am excited to say I have Bill Cushing. Bill, how are you today?
Oh, great. Fine. Hanging in.
I am really excited about this story. I want you to tell your parenting journey, and I don't want to give any spoilers.
Okay. Well, specifically, Gabriel, I have two sons, one from a previous marriage, but more specifically, I like to talk about Gabriel. When my late wife passed away, I did want to get involved again. And this is much later in life. I was 45 when I got remarried. And it was with the intention we were going to have kids. Well, Gisella, my wife now, is, it turns out she had problems that she didn't grow many eggs. What she grew were fairly small. In fact, we believe she had a couple of miscarriages before we finally went in vitro and did that route. And, you know, of course, because of our ages and, you know, her age as well, you know, she's a little bit younger than me, but not by much. They would keep an eye on things, and he wasn't growing very big, and her amniotic fluid was low. So we would do periodic ultrasounds. And one of the funny things was, to me, when we're doing the ultrasounds, I kept going, well, look, there's an arm or there's a leg or something. And the tech would always go, no, that's not it. Well, my theory now is that it probably was, but Gabriel, in the course of the pregnancy, suffered two strokes in vitro or intrauterine, whatever they call it. And I have a feeling he wasn't growing right. So it might well have been an arm, because probably the tech is like, well, no, that can't be an arm because it wouldn't be there normally. Well, he wasn't a normal kid. There was no doubt. And so we had to have a C-section because of the problems, the growth of him as a fetus. And as soon as he was born, I mean, the doctor called me over, and he was just physically an absolute mess. In fact, one of my poems in my first book, I do sort of describe what he looked like. And I called him a twisted pretzel of a child. But, the doctor said, look, we're going to take him back and see what we can do here. And I went to my wife, and she says, well, how's he look? I just said, well, look, there was a lot of blood. It was hard to tell. There was no way I was going to tell her
right
what it looked like initially until we could work into it. And so we went through, I mean, his first 2 years was, well, he spent about a month or so in NICU, and then we started casting and therapies, and we always knew there was going to be surgeries involved and that sort of thing. But it was interesting, because when he was born, because they did a CAT scan, they found the two blood clots, so they figured out, all right, that he, you know, he had some strokes. So they went ahead and checked the blood to see, was this an anomaly or might he have some tendency to strokes, like epilepsy or whatever. Well, apparently when the blood came back, the protein levels look out of whack. So they called genetics in. And this is at UCLA, which is one of the things I'm really grateful for. We were there.
Mm-hmm.
They've been handling his case since birth. So anyway, the blood work came back. They called in genetics. Genetics says, well, look, this looks like something here, some sort of metabolic disorder, but let's send the blood. They had to actually send some of his blood to Copenhagen.
Wow. Okay.
Because they treated this particular conditions much, much more deeply than anybody here in the States. And they came back and said, yeah, here's what it is. And then, luckily, I mean, it was a fatty oxidation disorder where he can't process food very well. And of course, this is in addition to the strokes. And so at least we were able to get him on a specialized diet, which he does need to be on basically for the rest of his life. So, you know, it's just, and then we, you know, he got I don't know if you've ever heard of arthrogryposis, which is a contracture of the joints. His scoliosis was horrible. We knew that was going to have to be attended to surgically later. We did do that eventually, but we let it go as long as we could. But then one of the an interesting story is, and this will be the final diagnosis. I probably about 8, maybe 9 years ago, he got really sick. Now the problem is with him, if he starts throwing up or anything like that, you immediately have to get him on an IV because he can't store food, he can't store energy as efficiently as most of us can. So he can't afford to lose anything, and he can't fast or any of that other stuff. So we took him to a local hospital. Well, as soon as they found out, as soon as we started giving them his background, they were like, "Look, we don't even want to touch this case. We don't have anybody here equipped to handle it." So we transferred him over to UCLA, got him there, and they said, "Well, let's run some more tests, and we'll test you and your wife as well, and because there's been so many more advances in the genetics on this stuff, and take a look." When we do the follow-up, we come in, there's a brand new doctor there. We're like, "Well, who are you?" He says, "Well, I'm here for, we found a different genetic disorder, which is called BRWD3, which is it causes, well, like he's got the mental retardation diagnosis, that's part of it, and enlarged head, and just a lot of things. But it's another very rare, and here again, unusual. I think there's only about 50 or 60 cases worldwide that are documented of this thing. Now, there's probably more people who have it. They just haven't really, worked with it that much. So, I say, they don't even have a name for it. Yeah, the BRWD3 is what it's called. So that's his diagnosis. So basically, yeah, Gabriel was born with all these medical conditions. And so that's basically, I mean, my wife and I immediately decided, look, we're going to go back. We're going to work part time. We're not going to work full time because you got to devote a lot of time to this guy. And so that's basically been his life and our lives to a great degree. But,
You touched on a few things in the beginning. You were married before and had a son, and you didn't think you were going to have other kids.
No, I never, I mean, when I say I like to wait between killing. My other
No
son,
judgment there. No
my
judgment
other
there at
son
all.
is he's 44 now, and Gabriel was 23. So, but a lot of things. I mean, I was at the time I was working blue collar work contract. I was traveling all over the place, and I really didn't settle down until I met my wife now, and so that was just.
What was it like as a man to want to have a child with your wife, knowing that she was having miscarriages and going through that sort of infertility journey, finding out about eggs? And I mean, I think, yeah, I'd love to know what you
We,
how
well,
that.
once it became clear that we were going to have to do something, we said, okay, fine, let's do it. So we set up, because she wanted to have children. I mean, she had never had a child, and that was one of the things she. Going into the marriage, she made that very clear. I said, "Well, look, I'll probably be playing catch in a wheelchair at my age, but I mean, I'm re ready to make a go of it." And that wasn't a big deal to us. And for me, when he was born, now it really upset her a lot. But my sister had Down syndrome, so I. And I sort of told my wife, I said, "Look, whatever happens with this guy, we can get through it. Believe me, it's I've been through this routine, not as a parent, but as a brother." I'm plus at the time my sister was a NICU nurse. I said, "We got a steady stream of information here."
So you handled the miscarriages and the infertility pretty well then.
Yeah, well, we it's funny because. We didn't even think of them as miscarriages until later. My wife started going, there was a couple of times that I skipped. And she said even one case was before she met me. So she said, yeah, I might have had several miscarriages in the past. I don't know. Yeah, but we had to inject her with this stuff to make the eggs grow and all this sort of thing. But so yeah, that wasn't a big deal to me, really.
What about finding, like, how did you find out that he was having strokes in utero?
Well, that's what I say. As soon as he was born, he was
Okay.
so physically deformed
Got
that they
it.
did a CAT scan, and then that was when the two blood clots showed up in the brain during
Okay.
the scan.
Because that would be terrifying. That.
But at least, I gotta say, I'm one of those people, I would rather have the information.
Yeah, me, I would too. I would too. I'm the same. I would agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But scary nonetheless. And I love that when he was born, you were just like, I didn't see a lot. They're going to take him
Yeah,
away.
no, there was no way I
That's
was going to tell him. She'd just been through a C-section, and I'm like, what am I going to say? Yeah, he looks like a circus freak. What can I tell you?
yeah. But that's a
Because when he
lot to
was born,
handle.
he literally was—I mean, he was so twisted up physically. But they took care of a lot of it in the day and a half they had him before we got to the
Okay.
NICU, and a lot of it was just, yeah, they physically bent, and then we did casting where we would. And a lot of therapies, and we're still doing the therapies with him. Now more just to keep him from stiffening up, because here again, one of the genetic conditions does not allow him to develop muscles very well,
Okay.
coupled with the orthopedic problems that don't give him a whole lot of range of motion and things like that. So yeah, I take him to the pool. We do pool therapy, where I'll just, because he loves being in the water, and this also, it gets him out of the wheelchair, lets him stand up a little bit.
Right.
But it's a lot easier to stretch, do these stretches underwater, I think.
Yeah.
In fact, that was one of the funny things, was when we were getting ready to leave the NICU. I remember one time that, because he had, I mean, immediately he had a geneticist, an orthopedics person, a GI guy, just four or five different specialists were immediately called in on the case.
Right.
They kept telling us, well, this is what you've got to do, this is what you got to do, this is what you got to do. I'm like, yeah, that stuff's going to be pretty painful for him. Yeah, but you got to do it. Well, of course, I have four different people telling me four different things to
Yeah.
do. And I said, look, before we even start, I think the best bet is all four of you get together, compare notes, decide what you think is the most, because I am not going to put this kid through hell all day long. So,
Right.
the line I use is like, I only want him to be scared of me when I want him scared of me, not
Yeah.
because of something you do. Okay.
Geez, every time he sees you coming, right? It's
Yeah,
going
I
to be
know. It's like,
something.
I mean, my God. Well, this is funny because my wife is a dentist, and I guess he was about probably maybe a year, maybe a little older, and I took him over to where she worked. And so she came, she heard I was there, she comes out. Of course, she's in the gown with the mask, and he just immediately freaks out. It's like, no, it's your
Oh,
mother, man. But of course, he'd never seen her dress like that. So
right.
all he knows, oh my God, another doctor. What are we going to do? Yeah.
So break down the conditions for me. He with the blood clots, were they able to, is that resolved so he doesn't have strokes
It doesn't seem
anymore?
to be a problem anymore. We
Okay.
did have one period, maybe when he was about 10 or 11, that he was kind of shaking and things like that. We're thinking, is he having some brain misfire? But we took him into the hospital and ran a bunch of tests, and that's, they actually brought in an endocrinologist and a lot of other neurology, that sort of stuff. So that's not a concern anymore.
Okay.
Our concern mostly is the genetic condition of the feeding, where that's one of the things, like
Okay.
when we take him to these community programs, we emphasize him to, look, he has to eat on schedule. You cannot separate the food from the treatment. The food is the treatment, because he
Okay.
can't store energy. He can't, he has to have a very low fat diet, which I should eat as well as he does.
No judgment here.
Yeah,
No judgment on
unfortunately,
that.
there's not going to be any pizza in his life. But a lot of beans, rice, fish, That sort of thing. A lot of quinoa in his diet, so he gets that.
Okay, so there's the diet, mental retardation you
Yeah,
mentioned.
the retardation is hooked up with the BRWD3. I mean, they
Okay.
do diagnose that way initially, but we didn't know why. And then when we did those later blood tests, and this is a funny story. I hope your audience finds it amusing. I certainly did. But when we got the BRWD3 diagnosis, the doctor, the specialist said, "Well, this is an X-linked disability, X-linked condition." I just turned to my wife and said, "Well, this one's on you. Okay, I'm not taking the heat for this one." Now, the other genetic is obviously we had the recessive traits, and he was the 1 in 4 chance. In other words, in fact, it was funny because when they got that diagnosis, the genetics people brought us in and they were asking us all these questions. And I went, these questions are getting kind of weird. What's your point here? The guy says, "Well, to be honest, most of the people whose offspring have this, the parents are related to each other."
Oh,
And I was like,
okay.
"Whoa." I said, "Wait a minute. I'm Irish German from New York. She's Spanish Italian from Peru." Okay.
Wow, okay, interesting. That's
It's
fascinating.
apparently, which is why Europe is, it's mostly Western Europeans who have this condition.
Okay.
And it is, apparently there's a family connection in there somewhere. I just always said, "Look, if we were related, it was back when they were painting caves in France." Okay.
Yeah. But that's interesting. It would probably be confusing to them because it presents so frequently one way and you
Yeah.
guys don't fit that. Okay. So that has a lot attached to it. You mentioned a book with poems, so I want to do a
Oh,
shout
yeah.
out because you are a very published author. You
Oh,
have
thanks.
several books and I published a book. It takes a lot. You've published several. So I always want to do a shout out for that. And I know that you're an English professor.
Yeah, well, retired, but I still teach once in a while.
Yeah. So English professor by trade, author on the side.
Yeah.
And I know that that's you know, you've woven a little bit of that into your parenting journey. So I
Absolutely.
really want to talk about what it's been like to raise him, because he's in his 20s now. There's no independent living
No,
situation
not at all.
happening.
He's pretty much immobile.
Yep.
And here again, mentally, it's interesting because mentally, in many ways, he's sharp, but then in many ways, it's like a 4 or 5 year old.
Right.
So it's interesting because I always said, if we could get you to focus, you would be great on computers, because this guy can go in and, in fact, here again, another story that I love is when he first started going to school, they gave us this or text-to-voice device, a Voca, that would let him talk.
Yeah.
And I told him, I said, "Well, look, maybe you should password protect this thing and let us open it up for him." They said, "Ah, no, don't worry, no problem." About 2 weeks in, we get a call from the school. Said, "What you guys do to this machine? You wiped everything out." I said, "Hey, don't talk to me. I haven't touched it. I told you this guy's going to get through any firewall you put up, probably." So
Yep.
he may have problems in one area, but man, when it comes to computers, he's good.
I think that's so fascinating. I have a son who's 25 who's autistic,
Okay.
and he is in an independent living situation. He's doing really well. I really advocated for that. But it's so fascinating where things fire and how strongly they do, and then where things don't. And I always believe, like, capitalize on what's firing. Like, that's great.
Well, I
That's
say the
wonderful.
problem with Gabriel, though, is getting him to do the task. As long as he's doing what he wants, he can do
I
anything. But
mean, me
the minute you
too.
say, "Well, let's do this," he's like, "Nah."
Nah. So you're raising a child with multiple diagnosis of severe d disabilities. I want to know what that's been like in your marriage, in your life. I love that you guys were both able to go down to like cut back working to make that a priority. That's exceptional. Tell me though what it's been like hearing that news and figuring it out and coming to terms with it and looking at the future with the surgeries and then going through all that. What's that been like for
It's been
you?
interesting. I tell you what, the surgeries, we were really impressed because when he was first born, they were like, we'll probably have to do the knees, the hands, the this, that, and the other. The only thing we had to do was the back.
Oh, okay.
Now it was pretty serious. I mean, for anybody who's familiar with this, the spinal fusion, it's a pretty intense surgery and pretty painful. Well, most people, when you talk to them about spinal fusion, oh, it's like two, maybe three vertebrae. 15 vertebrae, over half his back is fused
Oh my gosh.
because it was that bad. Because once we said, well, let's let it go because it's going to stunt his growth. We know that. So let's let him grow as much as we
Right.
can. But as soon as it starts interfering with respiration and things like that, then we got to go do it. So we let it go as long as we could. And then we said, well, look, it's going to start obstructing, food. It's going to start giving him problems breathing. Let's go ahead and do it now. I was really impressed because we got out of that. I mean, he wanted to go home like 5 days after the surgery. And the surgeon's like, really? I said, yeah, he wants to go home. Well, all right, let's go. And they gave us, now he can't take medication normally. It has to be in a liquid form. So we got sort of a liquid painkiller of some sort. He very rarely took it. I was like, we would ask him, you want something for the pain? He goes, no. And then once in a while I go, yeah, it hurts enough that he would take it. But I was like, man, you're a tough little mother. I was like,
That's pretty incredible. I mean,
stuff, I don't know if I could handle it. I'd be eating the painkillers like candy, probably.
yeah.
But yeah, so the surgeries, as it turned out, we didn't have to do as many as we first anticipated. The feeding part, in fact, it's funny you mentioned my books. One of the projects I've got coming up very shortly is I'm going to write basically a manual of instructions for taking care of it, in terms of, all right, here's what you've got to do. Here's how you should do it. I mean, you can adapt, obviously. But because, yeah, eventually, look, we're going to have to put him somewhere eventually. I mean, I just passed 72 years old. There's going to come a day when I'm not going to be able to pick him up and carry him. And he's too big for my wife. So realistically, we're already starting to look and consider places in the area, and we'll go scout them out. And in fact, one of the neurologists we have said, look, my suggestion is get on, you're going to have to be on a waiting list anyway. You might as well get on one now. If your name comes up and you don't need to go, fine. You just turn it down and go back to the end of the line. But, just, get that stuff working. Which is a great idea. We got to do that. The surgeries have not been bad. He's very, I mean, he's incredibly good natured, which is when he was first born, we had some problems. Now, I think a lot of it was because I think it's because of the strokes. He can't talk. I mean, he does, but it's very hard to understand him. When he was first very young, he would really, I mean, he would dig his nails. I mean, he would draw blood. Because he was trying to express frustration or something else, whatever. So we attended to it right away. We got behavior modification experts in. We worked with them. We worked with him. Later on, when we found out the BRWD thing, a lot of the parents that I've connected with on Facebook who have that condition, apparently violent outbursts are a big problem with some of these kids. And I said, we've never had that problem, but again, we sort of took care of it up front, and we found ways of channeling him into other things that will keep him from reacting with, negative consequences where, he's grabbing somebody and actually hurting. Now he still does it once in a while. I mean, drawing blood is like a five-man job,
Oh, I
something
bet.
like that.
I bet. I mean,
Yeah.
yes. I can see that.
So usually I'll take his hands and say, all right, I'll hold his hands. Everybody else holds something else. But this way, if he's going to dig his nails in anybody, it's going to be me. I don't care. I was going to say, I think one of the, to kind of answer your question, if you don't mind, I'll read. It's a kind of
Yes, I would
long
love
poem. It's
that.
a poem from my first book. And I think it sort of sums up our initial relationship. It's called Gabriel's Coming. Things did not turn out as perfectly as we had hoped. When the doctors extracted him from the womb, there he was, a twisted pretzel of a person, this child who was to be perfect, shaken and bloody as a wounded bird, and not much different. From the bony shoulders, like broken wings, crooked arms splayed up to the curled hands that seemed jammed under a quivering chin, attached haphazardly to a crooked head. Hips perpendicular to a withered torso, legs running up the sides of a pruny chest. All these deformities from blood that had clotted in the brain, a stroke. So a malady of the elderly became his personal anomaly. Blood soaked, crooked, crying, and brain damaged. This was how we greeted our son. Yet from those bodily barricades and out of that unquenchable panic came a boy who did not interrupt a family, did not join a family, but who created a family.
Oh.
So that's one of the pieces I wrote about him.
You wrote a paper, so I know people can get your books, but you actually wrote a paper, and I want to kind of wrap up talking about your advocacy with other families and the paper that you wrote.
Yeah, and I think that, and like the paper, or essay, whatever you want to call it, was called Getting to Know You, but the no was in quotes and it was spelled NO. And it was just dealing with him, dealing with all these, multiple conditions, and of course, relying heavily on outside help. We have to contest with agencies, insurance companies, all this other stuff. And one of the things I always emphasize is, no, you can't just take no. You can't walk away. You've got to say, well, wait a minute. Let's take a closer look. I think I'll give two quick examples. One was there was an experimental drug that we thought might help his condition. It was Baylor University down in Dallas. And we set everything up. We got it qualified into the thing. Ultimately, it didn't help him, but we did get involved in it. But before our first visit, we wrote to the insurance company and said, look, he's going to have to go in the hospital for a few days on this. So we want to clear it with you beforehand rather than bring him in the emergency room and going through all that. Well, they wrote back and said, no, we're not going to okay this. It's not approved, but you can appeal it. And we said, okay, we appealed it. We got a bunch of letters from all these medical experts, these doctors, and all this stuff, and sent it in and said, okay, this is why we think it's a good idea to cover it. And they immediately wrote back and said, well, no, but if you want to, you can go to a hearing and we'll take it to a judge. And I said, okay. So we called and we said, okay, you tell us where and when, and we'll be there. 3 days later, we get a letter from the insurance company that read, upon further investigation of new information, we have decided to cover. And I said, the only new information was we weren't going away.
I think that that's a great point, though, and it's a great story, is that you can't just hear the word no. I mean, I
I
wasn't
think a
dealing.
lot of people give up.
I agree because they don't know what to do. They feel overwhelmed, and you're being told no by these bigger agencies that don't see you as an individual. Yeah. So
Oh,
good for you for proving advocacy.
I
And
think one of the things that's helped us, I'm a writer, my wife's a dentist. So we've got the medical field, and I know how to present an argument. It's a kind of a good combination. I think a lot of times, especially, lower income people, they get cowed by these agencies. It's like, what can we do? Nothing. I mean, you got to pick your fights. We don't win every fight, but we were going to bring a fight. And I mean, we had another incident. And this was, I love telling this too, because we went in, we were trying to get some extra care for him at night because he was having some problems that we can't stay up 24 hours a day. We need to bring somebody in. And I said, no, he doesn't need it. And so we went to the hearing before the judge, and there was a nurse there who represented the state, and she gets up there and she talks about, oh, I looked at him, he really doesn't need the expo. So it came my turn to question her, and I said, well, what's her his condition? She goes, well, it's a metabolic genetic disorder. I said, yeah, but what? She goes, well, I don't know that. Okay, so I said, well, here it is. As I spelled it out for her, I said, what does it entail? She goes, well, I'm really not familiar. I said, well, have you ever talked to any other patient who had this? I knew the answer was no, because we were only one of two in California. So I was like, she goes, well, no, I've never encountered it before. I said, so how long did you evaluate Gabriel? I said, well, I was there for like 15, 20 minutes. So I said, so in other words, having spent 15 minutes looking at somebody who has a condition that you can neither name nor explain nor understand, you feel you're in a position to make a medical call on his treatment. And she was sort of a humming, a humming, a humming, you know, the old rough. What was funny, though, is during the course of our hearing, I think we objected two or three times, and we got sustained every time. And the lawyer for the state objected once or twice and just basically got shut down every time. And we came out of there, and my wife goes, I didn't like their lawyer. It was a female lawyer. I said, well, why not? She goes, well, she kept twirling her hair and shifting her seat. I said, hon, you never played poker, did you? She was getting her butt kicked, and she knew it. We were winning.
Yeah, I
She did not
mean,
expect, she came in with her set spiel, not knowing that we would be prepared to respond. And I think that's the big thing. If you're a parent of a child like this, you got to do your homework. I mean, when he was in the NICU, if I wasn't up there in the room with him, I was in the medical library looking stuff up and getting an understanding as much as
okay,
I could. So that's
that
my biggest piece of advice to parents,
okay.
just know it, you know.
That and that was what I kind of wanted to end on. Like, what is your best advice? Because you've had to fight harder than most, and one, picking your battles, but two, knowing all of your information.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing that really helps people. And we've, like I say, you know, we don't win every fight, but you know, we're going to try. We will go down swinging.
Bill, I appreciate you so much. Thank you so much for being on and sharing your story.
No problem. Always happy to, because like I say, I think there's a lot of people out there that need to hear this. Like, look, just because it's the state, just because it's a big agency or insurance company, they'll fold if the conditions are right. So we're going to have to get a wheelchair van. I sold my Thunderbird, which I loved my T-Bird for.
Well, that's true love right there, selling your Thunderbird.